John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
All right, well, you know, it looks like everything is set for the Power Five and maybe three other conferences to be able to try to play some college football. But, of course, college football is not official until you get the Field Steel College Football Magazine, which, of course, the preview is now there. And, of course, joining us right now is Phil Steele. And, Phil, I guess, you know, hearing your voice, seeing the magazine out is kind of a reassurance that at least we're going to have some college football this fall.
There you go, John, and I'm a firm believer in it. I think we are going to play fall football, and if it's conference only, I'm a happy guy. In fact, my magazine's based on conference records, so nothing really changes in the magazine. Maybe the schedule gets moved around a little bit, but I'm looking forward to having football in the fall, and if it's, like I said, if it's conference only, I'm still a happy guy.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, so many of the other conferences, it's going to affect the NFL draft next year. And I'm sure that some of the spring football teams right now may have some players opt out. But it was funny. I was looking at some mock drafts and, you know, the dominance of the Power Five and one mock draft for three rounds, about 91 of the 96 players that would go in that draft all come from the Power Five conferences. And I'm sure with the ratings that you have, would that be similar to what you see going in the top three?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, if for some reason this thing got moved back to the spring, I think it would have a huge impact. You know, take a look at Clemson. Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne, you know, would both, of course, opt out for the NFL draft. So, but we're not even going to talk about those possibilities, John, because we're playing football in the fall, doggone it.
Well, and that's the thing that I wanted to try to get into, because, you know, seeing how dominant the Power Five conferences are, it's like, for example, you know, particularly in the SEC, the Alabamas, and then over in the ACC with Clemson, maybe LSU, which of those teams in those two conferences have the most talent that, you know, it can be deep enough to carry through in the first three rounds?
You know, I think it's, they all have the talent there, but they would be missing, if they lose those first three round people, they would be missing quite a lot. I mean, you know, Alabama would lose a Dylan Moses. They would lose a Jalen Waddle, Patrick Surtain, Devontae Smith. All these guys would be heading out in the first three rounds of the draft. And those are guys that they're counting on this year, because generally Alabama loses a lot to the draft. And they replace them with guys that are getting ready for the draft. Well, if you replace two classes like that, whereas Alabama has talent, they would have very, very little experience. And I think this year, John, experience is going to play a major role, because with the lack of spring practices, you need to have experienced teams.
No doubt about it. So right now, who would be your five, six best teams in college football coming up this fall?
Well, I went way out of the box here, John. I've got Alabama coming out of the SEC.
Really?
Ohio State.
Alabama? I'm surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. Ohio State coming out of the Big Ten. How about Clemson out of the ACC and Oklahoma out of the Big 12? Those are my top four. But I will throw a surprise at you, John. I don't want to just go with the chalk guys there. And my surprise team this year, my number one surprise team, is Texas A&M. And it goes back to my conversations with Jimbo Fisher. Now, first of all, last year when I talked to Jimbo, he had two great recruiting classes, so he's already building the talent there. But the one thing that stuck out to me in the conversation was, well, two things did. Number one, the lack of seniors on the squad. They had very few, about four or five seniors. And also the very tough schedule they were about to play. And as it was, Texas A&M took on number one ranked Clemson, number one ranked Alabama, and number one ranked LSU all in the same year. Who plays three number one teams in one year? They also played number four Georgia and number eight Auburn. So five top ten teams, those were their five losses with the young squad. This year they have 17 returning starters coming back. Kellen Mond's now a veteran senior, and the group is loaded with seniors. Plus, they've got three recruiting classes for Jimbo Fisher, and really do go three deep at every position. So it's an experienced squad, which I think is vital this year. It's a third year for Jimbo Fisher, which is when I think new head coaches usually reach their peak, and the schedule gets a lot lighter. They're not going to be playing three number one ranked teams this year. They may only play one or two top 10 teams all season long. So with the easier schedule, the experience level they have, I think if you're looking for that surprise team out there that no one's got in their preseason top 10 that could contend for a playoff spot, it's Texas A&M. And I actually do have the Aggies ranked number five in my preseason rankings.
Yeah, what's so, I guess, the pattern now in college football is that you pretty much know there's four or five teams that are always going to be right up top, and then there's a big separation after that. I mean, you always kind of figure that Alabama and Ohio State and maybe now Clemson and then one other team kind of fits into those into the four format. What's it going to take now for everybody else to start catching up to these teams?
Well, the good news is this year, John, it is a lot closer. You know, let's take a look at the ACC, for example. Last year, the ACC was Clemson, a Grand Canyon, and then I can't even tell you who the second best team was last year. There really wasn't a second best team in the ACC. In fact, I rated the ACC last year the number six rated conference. Even though there are Power Five, is the first time ever in my magazine I rated a Power Five conference below a Group of Five conference. I had them number six, the American Conference number five. But this year, the ACC is a vastly upgraded group. You look at North Carolina, they have 17 returning starters, and quarterback Sam Howell is back this year. And Howell is going to be one of the top quarterbacks in the entire country. He played great as a true freshman last year. Mack Brown did a tremendous job turning them around last year. Now they're poised to contend. And remember, they were a missed two-point conversion away from beating Clemson last year. Miami got some big-time additions. They added De'Aaron King from Houston. Now, De'Aaron King had 36 touchdowns passing, 14 touchdowns rushing. That's 50 touchdowns in 2018, and he missed two games at Houston. He transfers in at QB and solves their offensive woes. And then defensively, they've got Gregory Rousseau back, a redshirt freshman, a guy who I'm sure you're thinking of for the NFL draft next year. I've got him in the top five. He had 15 and a half sacks. And now they bring in the American Conference transfer from Temple, Quincy Roche. He was the American Conference Defensive Player of the Year with 13 sacks. He's at the other defensive end spot. They're going to have a good, very good defense. I think Miami's much upgraded. Virginia Tech's got 17 returning starters. Pitt had three guys turn down the NFL last year, and Patrick Jones at defensive end, nose tackle Jalen Twyman, and Paris Ford at strong safety. And that's going to make them a lot stronger defensively. Plus, Coach Narduzzi's been talking to me about Kenny Pickett, saying this guy's going to be an NFL quarterback. Well, this is his year to step up and prove that. So I think the Coastal's the most improved division. And I do think that Grand Canyon gap Clemson had has closed this year. It wouldn't surprise me if we have a competitive ACC title game, especially with the addition of Notre Dame now into that league. You go to the Big Ten, I think Ohio State's going to be legitimately challenged by Penn State. Penn State's another one of those teams which I've watched James Franklin build on a weekly or on a yearly basis. But this is his best team yet. And last year they may have arrived a year early. They were inexperienced last year, got to 8-0, number five in the country. Then they lost two close games, at Minnesota, at Ohio State. This year they've got practically the entire team back. They get Ohio State in Happy Valley. It wouldn't surprise me if Penn State won the Big Ten. And then with Oklahoma in the Big 12, they're going to be challenged by Texas, which was young last year. They only had eight returning starters. This year they have 16. And Oklahoma State, which had a couple guys turn down the NFL, and Chuba Hubbard at running back and Tylan Wallace, a wide receiver, to go along with Spencer Sanders, who was just a freshman quarterback last year. And they've got 10 starters back on D. So I do think the competitive level is a lot closer in almost every conference this year. So that's going to make it a lot more wide open. And despite the fact I picked the top four to make it to the Final Four, we could see anything happen this year.
Where do you have the Pac-12 as far as among the conferences?
Right now I've got the Pac-12 as the fourth best conference. I think when you look at the Pac-12 this year, two teams really stand out to me talent-wise. That's USC and Oregon. I think they are the most talented teams in the Pac-12. But you can make a case for Washington and Stanford making a move up there. And I do think, John, that the conference only is probably going to hurt the Pac-12 a little bit this year, where they're going to need their conference champ to have zero or one losses, because without the fact that they can't play conference or non-conference games and prove where they are with the other conferences, I think the national look at the Pac-12 has always been a little less, which is why the Pac-12 has had a tough time making the playoffs. And now playing conference-only games, that may hurt them a little bit.
Yeah, and of course, what do you think about the changeover with Jimmy Lake and how that's going to be now coaching and where this Washington team can be?
I'm impressed with Coach Lake. Talking to him at length, going over the squad with him, even though he had very few spring practices. Naturally, he has great knowledge of the team because he's been the defensive coordinator. And I've always been impressed with Coach Lake, the job he's done. I mean, it goes back a couple years ago. They lost three guys in the second round of the NFL draft out of the secondary. And you thought, well, the secondary is going to struggle this year. And then they still ranked in the top 15. Last year, they only had two starters back on defense. They lost the bulk of the team to the NFL. Yet, defensively, they only gave up 19 points per game. Well, they've got eight starters back. I have no questions at all about Washington's defense. It will be one of the better units in the country. Now, the questions come offensively. You know, they lose Ahmad at the running back spot, a 1,000-yard receiver. They lose Jacob Eason, a quarterback. They lose the top two receivers. And they also lose three starters on the offensive line. But I like the replacement of quarterback and Jacob Sermon. I think he's a guy that is a big, strong-arm, pro-style quarterback. And he's got the size and the arm that you want out of the quarterback position. The running back core looks pretty good with Richard Newton, Sean McGrew, Cam Davis. If they can get that offensive line reworked quickly, and they've got pieces to build on, Jackson Kirkland, a left tackle, Luke Wattenberg at center are both solid, then Washington could be that sneaky contender to Oregon in the North this year, despite the first-year head coach, because unlike other first-year head coaches, Coach Lake doesn't have to learn the team this year. He knows them inside and out.
So now, how can everybody get the Phil Steele College Football Preview, both either at the stores, online, or also through the mail?
Well, I appreciate that, John. Now, it's a little different this year. We normally print a couple hundred to thousand of these things and send them out everywhere, grocery stores, every bookstore. But this year I only printed 50,000, John, so only two places are selling them, Barnes & Noble and Books A Million exclusively. So if there's a Barnes & Noble in the area, make sure you head over, grab your copy now before they're sold out because it's a very limited quantity. Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, or you could go to our website, which is philsteele.com. That's STEELE.com. philsteele.com, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, the only places to get the magazine this year.
Bill, great stuff. Looking forward to college football, but also looking forward to the magazine now that it's out. And, of course, everybody, you better move fast because if you don't get it, you're the loser. Hey, Phil, you're the winner. Thank you so much.
Hey, John, always great talking football with you. One of my favorite segments every year.
Hey, you can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we're going to get out the report card. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
In the report card we bring out each day, we look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We take the stories, we take the anecdotes, we take the social media comments and the voices, and we attach a grade to it. Curtis Rogers gives us a report card each day, so let's do it.
Yeah, John, we got a lot on today's report card. Lots of grading to get to. Let's start with Major League Baseball. Instead of figuring out their COVID policy, because today the St. Louis Cardinals announcing they had two players test positive. I believe another Marlins player tested positive. The Marlins are up to 18. Cardinals are up to two. Eight teams now have had games impacted by those two teams testing positive over the last couple of days. Well, Major League Baseball, instead of figuring that out, they went and announced that both games of all doubleheaders in the 2020 season will be seven innings each. I'm sure that'll fix every problem, John. How are we grading Major League Baseball saying that doubleheaders will be seven innings each instead of two nine-inning games?
It's just great planning and an F. I mean, they are so clueless. It's like it's like here it is. You let the teams decide and let a shortstop decide whether the Miami Marlins are going to play with three positive tests that came out on Saturday. And I don't even know if the team consulted the league or whatever they did, because they had the three positive tests. And the next thing you know, here it is. They just now are stuck in Philadelphia. I know that they're taking now their 19 players that have tested positive, and so they're taking the 19 players and some personnel people, and they're putting him in a bus, driving him down from Philadelphia to Miami. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And then, you have one positive test on one situation, and then you're canceling a game. I don't get it. This is ridiculous. And so a continued F, and, I don't know. Larry, Bob, the F in Manfred is getting more pronounced.
Yeah, it's just an F all the way around. I mean, yeah, maybe this works, and these doubleheaders will be able to get played in full. Woohoo. You've got way bigger issues on hand here, Rob Manfred, in Major League Baseball. The state, your season is hanging in the balance right now, and if they don't get this stuff under control and really get through to these players that, hey, if you don't abide by our rules, then you're not going to be able to play this year. That is what needs to happen. I mean, yeah, you can reschedule doubleheaders all you want, but it seems as though there is a huge lapse in communication right now, because we're seeing so many teams get games postponed, and they only have a limited number of days in which they can make them up. It's awful where baseball is, F all the way around. John, also on the report card today, Boomer Esiason on his show on WFAN in New York City, talking about Jamal Adams and the way he left the Jets organization. Boomer did not waste words when talking about Jamal Adams here.
Jamal is a great football player. I don't know if he's a bipolar person. I don't know what other issues he may have in his life. But what he did here with the Jets was an absolute disgrace in how he reacted. And then, you know, putting out a tweet trying to balance going to Seattle and being happy going there and telling the Jet fans that I love you guys. I'll always be with you. You started with me and you supported me. You know what? If I were a Jet fan, I'm like, get the hell out and don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out.
I would think that's the sentiment by most Jet fans for sure.
Yikes, Boomer. Not a fan of Jamal Adams. How are we grading Boomer's assessment of the newest Seahawks?
F. I mean, absolute F minus. You know, to be able to say, you know, even make an allegation that Jamal Adams, one of the best players on the team, is bipolar. I don't know if he's bipolar or not, but you never bring that up.
Yeah.
I mean, you're damaging the reputation of a player, and that should never happen. I mean, that is an absolute F, and I can't give it any positive grades because it's bad and it's wrong.
Yeah, it's an F for Boomer Esiason there. I mean, I think by all accounts, the Jets are a mess of an organization from top to bottom. And the fact that Jamal Adams didn't want to play there, I think, is pretty understandable from everybody who, you know, watches the NFL. Like, of course you'd want to go play for a team that's in going to challenge for a championship here. And Seattle, definitely within the realm of possibility, they could challenge for a championship. I don't blame Jamal Adams one bit for wanting to get out of New York. Yeah, he could have handled it a lot better, maybe not dragged Adam Gase through the mud on his way out the door. But to call him bipolar is a broad stroke of the brush that I think need to be reined in there, Boomer. That was totally unnecessary and totally uncalled for. John, also on the report card, the new Monday Night Football crew has been rumored to be announced, and it's not Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler, who a lot of people thought it was going to be. It's going to be Steve Levy, Brian Greasy, and Lewis Riddick, a three-man booth looking to take the 2020 season here. So how do we grade the three-man trio of Steve Levy, Brian Greasy, and Lewis Riddick?
I give it a B+ because I'm a big fan, having worked with Steve Levy, actually having worked with all these people. It's like, I like Steve. It's going to be interesting to see Brian, because I think the times I've heard him on college, he was very good. And Lewis Riddick, I think, is a good evaluator. And so it's going to be, you know, very professional with Steve. It'll be all football with Brian and Lewis Riddick. I'm going to give it a B+.
Yeah, I'll give it a solid B. I think this is going to be a really safe crew. I don't think they're going to be as overdramatic as Joe Tessitore was, which is going to be nice. I think Joe Tess kind of got lost in the bright lights there sometimes. Steve Levy, the ultimate pro. Brian Greasy, one of the good guys. And like you mentioned, John, Lewis Riddick, he's played, he's worked in front offices, he's done it all, so he knows how to evaluate talent. And then finally, John, on the report card today, if you were listening to 710 ESPN Seattle in the bright and early hours of the morning, you heard Mike Golic Sr.'s final day hosting on ESPN Radio. John, 22 years he sat in that chair and hosted mornings for ESPN Radio. I know Golic Sr., he's appeared on our show a few times over the last couple of years. We had him on at the Super Bowl. How are we grading just the radio career of Mike Golic Sr.?
An absolute A+, because he's so good. He's so passionate. I mean, you know, he's able to give the identity of what he does so well, and to be able to hold down a spot like that for 22 years, and it should be longer. He should not be off that show. I give him an A+.
Yeah, A+ all the way around to Mike Golic Sr. Just an incredible career. He will stay at ESPN. He's going to be doing some football analysis. So, yeah, just an incredible career. The times we've had him on the show, he's been super accommodating, super nice. So, can't say enough good things about him. That is it for today's report card, John.
Okay, be sure to check out the Professor's Notes at 710sports.com. Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we go on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, taking your text questions at 710-710. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Normally in the National Football League, we'll have the Friday news dump, and it looks like we could be getting a bunch of that today because the word has officially come down on Antonio Brown, Tom Pelissero from the NFL Network reporting he's getting an 8-game suspension. And it could be extended longer because, you know, they've got two cases involving women that have lawsuits against him. And if, of course, if he does anything else, the suspension can go longer. And so Antonio was asking for what's coming from the league. It's now officially come. Now you wonder, is Josh Gordon going to be decided today? Is there going to be anything on Randy Gregory? But Antonio Brown, 8 games. And Curtis, I would have to venture to think that pretty well takes him out of the picture for Seattle.
Yeah, I don't think they want to wait around 8 games for Antonio Brown. I don't think many teams are going to want to wait around 8 games for him. I think this definitely increases the likelihood that Josh Gordon ends up as a Seahawk because
yeah.
I don't think he's going to have any sort of suspension near the length that Antonio Brown is getting here.
No, because again, I think it's just there's still maybe 2 games remaining on the suspension and all that, and as long as he doesn't test positive or do anything bad, which I don't think he did anything bad, you would anticipate he should get some decision today or in the next week. But Antonio Brown, 8-game suspension. That's official right now coming from Tom Pelissero. Hey, coming up, we're taking the text questions on the Visi Hard Seltzer text line at 710-710. So, Curtis, what do we have?
John, from the 425, let's start with this one. They want to know, is there any new news on Michael Kendricks? He was cleared to resume football activities a couple weeks ago, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. But again, it's like, they still don't have the total ability to bring anybody in for physicals. Because again, right now, even the physicals and some of the guys all the guys on the team right now that haven't been in town or in the cities that they're playing, they can't get the physicals until they get 2 negative tests. And so they can't start getting the physicals until the weekend. And so that puts, there's nothing new on Kendricks because, again, until you can check out that knee, you can't do anything.
206 wants to know, how did Travis Homer's offseason go, and do you see an increased role for him in 2020?
I don't know if it's going to be an increased role at all. I think it's going to be, I think that one thing that we'll see, it's going to be a little bit of a battle between DJ Dallas and him to see who's going to get maybe some third down carries, because right now you have the backup is going to be Carlos Hyde until Rashad Penny gets healthy from his knee injury, and so it may not increase. I think it's going to stay maybe about the same, maybe a little bit more, but that's still to be determined.
253 wants to know, what is your early prediction for the NFC Championship game?
I mean, right now, I still go with New Orleans, and we'll see who's going to be the other team, and it probably will come out of this division. Could be San Francisco, could be Seattle, but again, Seattle's getting closer, if not passing San Francisco for talent, and that next move could put them over the top.
From the 360, they want to know, John, which team do you think could take a leap similar to what the 49ers did a year ago?
None. Nobody. I mean, to go from 2 wins to the Super Bowl, you just don't see that. That just doesn't happen. I think Arizona has a chance to be the most improved team in football. That we can see, but that can maybe only take them to maybe eight or nine. I don't see a jump like that, and particularly in a year like this where you have no off-season program. I really question whether you're going to see a worst to first. That, I think, is going to be very difficult to do because, again, you look at all the bad teams, and again, Arizona being the best of the bad teams, they have either young quarterbacks or they don't have the roster to be able to do it. I mean, the only team that may be having an outside chance could be the Chargers, but then they're not going to do it in a division with Kansas City.
206 wants to know, how do you think the Eagles will utilize Jalen Hurts?
I think that he'll be over there with a mask and standing on the sidelines not doing anything because, I really don't envision him being the quarterback that's going to go in and do the type of plays that you see down in New Orleans. I just don't know if they really want to do that. I don't think it's really necessary to do that. Carson Wentz is your quarterback. I mean, you got Nate Sudfeld as the backup quarterback. I just think he's going to be on the bench.
253 wants to know, how encouraged are you by Kyle Lewis's start to the season?
I'm very impressed. I mean, again, the fact that, I looked it up yesterday, he was like number 3 in the league for average. He's shown power. I mean, he's been absolutely electric, and right now, could be one of the leading candidates for Rookie of the Year.
360 wants to know, what win total do you think the Packers get?
I'd say maybe 10. I think there's going to be a drop-off because I really think that they weren't as good as people think with the 13-win season. A lot of things came together. I still wonder about their running ability, or their ability to stop the run. I think that you can see that they're... You know, they didn't do anything at wide receiver, absolutely nothing, and they needed some help. And so Aaron Rodgers doesn't have much else, and it got worse when Devin Funchess decided to opt out. So they have the same receiving crew as last year, which wasn't good enough.
From the 509, they want to know, do you think the Colts are the division favorite in the AFC South?
In my opinion, yeah. I mean, look what they've been able to add. They've been able to add Phillip Rivers at quarterback, DeForest Buckner at defensive tackle. They were able to get Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman at the on the offense, Taylor at running back, Pittman there. Their defense is young and getting better. So I think right now with Rivers, they move to the top.
From the, let's go with the 206, they want to know how big of a difference will Jason Peters playing guard be for the Eagles?
It'll be a drop-off. I mean, you know, Peters is a great player, a potential Hall of Fame player for his years at left tackle, but they're just patching. I mean, he knows the offensive line, so that's one of the reasons they brought him back. But again, Brandon Brooks is one of the best guards in football. I know on the NFL Network he was like 98 as far as best players in the league. And so to take a Pro Bowl guy like that with an older guy playing a new position, there's a drop-off.
253 wants to know, what are your expectations for Josh Jacobs after his impressive rookie season?
I think that he'll be one of the better backs in the league because he's that good. I still think that it's a shame that he didn't get a Rookie of the Year honor, but, that's just the cards and the way things go. But I think he's really good, clearly probably about a 1,200-yard season.
509 wants to know, John, because last year the NFC East was the worst division in football. They want to know, how many wins do you think it'll take to win that division this year?
It's going to take 11, I think, because, Philadelphia is still good, and Dallas is good. And so, Dallas is certainly one of the most talented teams in the league, and I think Dallas has the advantage, and particularly with all the power they have on offense. And, they may have to put so much into this year because keeping the team together next year is going to be difficult. I'd say right now Dallas at 11 wins.
Another 253 wants to know, John, do you think Jamal Adams is the best safety in the NFL right now?
Yes. I mean, that's the opinion of a lot because they think that he's good enough to compete for Defensive Player of the Year now every year. The NFL Network voted him with the players at 27, which was the best safety and the 10th best defensive player in the league, according to the NFL Network and the players.
509 wants to know, John, would signing Josh Gordon and adding another veteran pass rusher be enough to put the Seahawks over the 49ers?
100%. I mean, maybe even just getting the Josh Gordon addition there could put them over the 49ers because, again, you see that the 49ers are going to drop back. They're not going to win 13 games this year. They're probably going to be more of an 11-win team, because you look at the fact that, Buckner's being in place by Devin Kinlaw, a rookie. The receiving core is a little bit shaky, particularly with Deebo Samuel not being there for the first couple games of the season, because he's got that Jones fracture. Their cornerbacks on the other side of Richard Sherman, they haven't fixed up yet. So they're good, but right now they're not 13 wins good.
From the 206, they want to know, do you think Quentin Dunbar's suspension will be shorter or longer than Antonio Brown's?
I think it's got to be shorter because, again, it's like, okay, Antonio's pleaded guilty to assault on a moving van driver, and you've got a situation right now with just an accusation that's there. It's a bad one. I mean, the four charges of armed robbery is bad, but, again, he's not going to have a trial for a year and a half to 2 years. And so with that in mind, I'd say that at some point they've got to lift it, and I don't even think it should carry into the season.
From the 509, they want to know, John, if Will Disley's able to stay healthy the entire season, could he be a top five tight end in the NFL?
I don't think so. I think he's a good starting tight end, but I don't think at the moment you can consider him a top five tight end because you have so many good tight ends around the league. Austin Hooper, who got the who went to Cleveland. I mean, you've got Hunter Henry, a franchise player with the Chargers, George Kittle, Travis Kelce. I mean, you go through the whole list, and you're going to have more than five. But right now, I mean, hey, just be there to see if he can beat out and get some playing time away from Greg Olsen.
That will do it for text questions.
Okay, so that's the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. So coming up next, our daily dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And it's time for our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. Well, finally, we get some definition on Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown, you know, put out a tweet on a Monday that he was going to retire, then comes back a couple days later and says, hey, commissioner, it's like, why don't you tell me how long the suspension is? I'm not finished. Well, guess what? He's finished for 8 games because he gets an 8-game suspension. You know, Robert Klemko from the Washington Post and Tom Pelissero from the NFL Network reporting it. And apparently what they're saying is it's a suspension for violations of personal conduct policy. And, you know, he's going to miss 8 games, and it could go more because they're still checking out the two lawsuits that he has by women, and so it's at least 8 games. I think that pretty well ends the story with Seattle going for Antonio Brown.
Sounds good to me, John. I'm a little more excited about opening day, even though it's a little weird of an opening day. There'll be a lot of cardboard cutout fans out there, but the Mariners are actually returning home with a little bit of momentum off their road trip. So
yep.
We'll see what this young guys can do playing at home, and meanwhile, there's still warning signs out there. You see another baseball game canceled today because of COVID, so that's 20% of them so far. And I saw a story, too, just before we went on about the Big Ten deciding in 5 days whether or not they're going to play college football or not, and the smart money seems to be on not. So a mixed bag on Friday, but as far as I'm concerned, Antonio Brown not coming to the Seahawks is good news.
Yeah, I agree, because again, I thought it was, you know, because, you know, now the thing is, I guess, you know, you could sign him and then have him for the second half of the season, but why? He's going to be more problems than he's worth.
Point.
I mean, that's just, it's ridiculous to think. And I don't know, personally, I've been so, it's one of the stories that it gets clicks, it gets interest, but it's, I got sick of it. I got sick of, you know, getting Antonio Brown. So, you know, I'm not wishing him to get the 8 games, but he's got the 8 games, and that takes him out of the mix, because, you know, you want to get a good start, and you're not getting, all you can have him for is for the finish.
Exactly. So, meantime, we can focus on other things, like
yeah,
like the Mariners returning tonight.
Yeah, of course. I mean, let's go into it, because, you know, I know Rob Manfred has an F in the middle of his last name, and I think he gets another F because it's like there doesn't seem to be a plan. I mean, you know, they talk about, oh, we got this protocol and all that stuff, and so you have the Miami Marlins, not in Major League Baseball, making the decision to go ahead and play in Philly, even though they've got 3 positive tests and had to ask the shortstop. So the shortstop has more power than the commissioner. And so now you've got 19 Marlins that are, you know, sitting in a bus driving from Philadelphia to Miami just so they can get back home. That's bad. And then now you have in the St. Louis game, you know, one player or one person tested positive and they're shutting it down. What's going on?
Let's go a step further, John. Anthony Rizzo of the Cubs tweeting out player safety. MLB let us sit around for 8+ hours inside the clubhouse. That was during a rain delay yesterday. I'm sure I can't find that somewhere in the 113-page safety protocol. So your original statement is correct. It's scattershot. There are not protocols in place for all the things that might happen. I mean, that's something that they should have planned for. If there's a rain delay, what do we do about, you know, having everyone sitting around in the clubhouse? And,
yeah,
and they're finding that. And, you know, I'll cut him some slack. Again, this is uncharted territory for everyone, and I would encourage your National Football League to be looking very closely on this, because they put out 113 pages, and you know, you can't think of everything. You simply can't, and players aren't going to look at all of them, and there are continuing things that are going on. Like we said, with that game canceled tonight, that's 20% of the games, and you've played a week. Mm-hmm. Basically, so you know, it's not very good going forward. It seems that I'm hoping I'm wrong, but it's seeming like a lot of signs are pointing towards baseball having to stop this thing before it goes on much further. I hope I'm wrong, but you know, the law of unintended consequences is what's dominating the sports scene today, and that's the pitfalls that they've fallen in MLB. They've had everything that can go wrong has gone wrong so far, And it's too bad, because you know, they've done a couple of, I credit, you know, Kevin Martinez of the Mariners and the those departments who have found a way to try and, you know, do something, you know, have some crowd noise in there, have some cardboard cutouts, have it look like baseball as much as you possibly can. But boy, it feels like they're swimming upstream. It sure does.
But, of course, it's like swimming upstream, but it seems like, you know, Manfred and who's ever running things, they're swimming without the ability to swim because, you know, where's the plan? It's like, okay, so you can have a player.
Well, they got a 113-page proposal out there. I mean, they got 113 pages of protocols and things like that. So they have a plan. The question is it a very good plan, and were they – did they anticipate all the things they could have anticipated? And it seems like they did not.
No, but of course, I mean, that's where I think I give where the NFL has a great chance to be able to at least get going is that, you know, in their protocol, you know, they have more restrictions than anything else. Like, for example, I mean, they've told players that if you're in the hotel, you can't leave the hotel. If they have players, if you know, like Patrick Mahomes ended up buying into the Kansas City Chiefs, but no player in the NFL is allowed to attend a sporting event. You can't attend a concert. If you go to a bar, you can only take takeout. There's so many limitations, and now even adding to it, because they've made more changes in the last couple of days, they're going to have a compliance officer that's going to be working with the teams, and that compliance officer is going to make sure, as long as they get the support, and I'm sure they will, from the veterans on the team, that it's like telling the young players, don't do anything wrong, and trying to make sure that the players don't do anything wrong. Because, again,
I think they're probably learning from baseball's mistakes there, and we'll see how players follow it as religiously as they're supposed to. And I go back to the fact that and it would have been extremely difficult to do, if not impossible, in football. But, you know, the NBA started last night. They've got their guys in a bubble so far, so good, and that's just one game or one night of games. I understand that. But, that seems to be the safest way to go to get things started here. And we'll see, John. I wouldn't count my chickens yet with the NFL. There's a whole lot of things that can't be anticipated that can still go wrong, you know, and I think everyone is kind of doing their best. But it's definitely a dicey situation.
Well, and it was interesting for the Mariners because, you know, right before the start of the Texas series, you said, okay, you know, this team was 1-18 against the Astros. If they can go win one game of the first four, that's a positive. And even more positive was going against the Angels and winning 2 out of 3 and getting their bats going.
Their bats have really been impressive, John. It's been interesting to see. Like I said, we're not anticipating, you know, much in terms of results, I think, long-term, just because of what their pitching staff looks like. But you see pieces in place. I mean, this year was about, you know, do you have some of the pieces in place to be successful moving forward? And some guys are making a pretty loud statement that you do, like Evan White, who they committed to, who looks extremely good and is beginning to turn around at the plate. Kyle Lewis is hitting extremely well, out of the chute. J.T. Crawford is hitting extremely well out of the chute. You see the essence of the plan. Now these guys have got to maintain it while they bring up the pieces around them. But you've got the youngest team in the majors, which is a good sign. And as you pointed out, off of a winning series with the Angels, they play the A's, and Marco Gonzalez pitched well last night as well. So they definitely have shown some bright spots. There's no question about it.
Well, it's always a bright spot when we have our daily dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. So, David, I hope you have a good, safe, enjoyable weekend.
You Claytons do the same thing. Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you. And, of course, we will be back tomorrow morning at 8 to 9 taking your phone calls, and then back on Monday. And Curtis Rogers, thanks again for the great week.
Thank you, John. It was a fun one.
Yeah, it really was. And, of course, the news out of the NFL, which I know that is coming up next, Tom Stacey and Jake talking about it. Antonio Brown, 8-game suspension. I think that ends his chance of the Seahawks wanting him. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.